I'm so full of joy and excitement, and I feel so honored that I have the chance that I can today welcome Bence Ganti to the Conscious Evolution Summit.
Thank you for the invitation, Puria, and hello everyone.
And yeah, hello to you listening to the audio, to you watching the video, and I hope that the conversation with Bence will bring new insights to you, will deepen some of what you already learned. And together with Bence, I really want to use the time together that we kind of all get to know the integral map, a map of our, let's say, of our evolution as individuals, as groups, as a collective. And maybe some of you are already familiar with this work. Some of you might be new. So Bence, I really would love you to give us a bit an overview. What does the integral map mean and offer to us?
Okay, so basically we are talking about an integral consciousness that refers to a stage of evolution. So in integral, we think in developmental models that the evolution of consciousness goes through stages of evolution. And what do we mean by consciousness? We mean the inner subjective experience. As the doctors and physicians do the external experience, your body, your blood cells, or that of many people, psychologists or spiritual teachers, coaches, alternative healers, shamans, lamas, yogis, they all basically are experts of the inner subjective world. What do I experience? What do I feel? What happens in my consciousness? How do I process that? And it seems that this subjective internal world has also a stage evolution. We are aware of stage evolution of the external world. We are talking about eras of humanity, the historical eras, that the kind of stage model from ancient to medieval to modern to postmodern. That's kind of a stage model too that everybody knows. Or biologists would say that there is a stage model of development of the animal kingdom, you know, from one cell organisms to multiple cell to lizards, mammals, high mammals, man, basically. So also this kind of stage thinking. And over the 20th century, many psychologists came to the conclusion that for the subjective world, we also have that stage development. And by around the 70s, when the founder of integral psychology, Ken Wilber, started his work and wrote the first integral books, there were so many stage models out there, both in Western psychology and both people became interested from the 60s to study the spiritual traditions of the East, yoga, Buddhism, Sufism, Christian mysticism, shamanism, etc., East and other directions, but the spiritual traditions. So what basically Ken Wilber did is integrating the developmental models within psychology and put that together and integrate it with the developmental models in the various spiritual traditions. So basically, for the first time, we had a 360-degree coverage of integration of these different developmental models that has never happened before. So before, maybe one person took Chinese medicine and compared it to Western medicine, or somebody took psychoanalysis and compared it to astrology. So comparison between two or three systems, but comparison between 100 plus systems and all the major systems that are out there in the market, in the global psycho-spiritual market from ancient to modern, that's the significance of Wilber's model, because he did that matching, basically. So we have this master template of human development in the integral, in Wilber's integral model, which we call integral psychology, integral philosophy, or simply integral theory, also sometimes referred as AQUAL model. This is an acronym referring to the content of the model. So that's what made me so enthusiastic as a young psychologist in my early 20s when I found integral psychology, that finally, you know, someone put together the pieces and finally we have a global psychology where we naturally talk about Buddhism, Zen, Enlightenment, Christianity, psychoanalysis, NLP, holotrope breathwork, mind-altering drugs, humanistic, Rogers, cognitive psychology, psychiatry, whatever, you know, territory of the psychospiritual world. So, and from this, basically, thinking comes the actual stage development model. We call it the stages of development or ladder model of development, and its newer versions, the Wilbercombs lattice and other charts that I will gladly show, you know, in this program if you are interested. But this is kind of the basis of what integral approach is.
Mm-hmm. And maybe, Bence, we could dive a bit more deeper into this stages of development.
Yes. Okay, so there are different versions of it, and I will show you, I will share my screen and try to navigate in my computer while showing my screen to you. So this is basically the basic model that we use right now, the Ken-Wilber stages of consciousness. I created this summary chart last year in 2017, so it's a pretty updated one. We are talking about 40 years of work of Wilber, and as you can see on the left side, the labels of the stages, it's either number W1 or W2, which refers to Wilber's stage one, Wilber stage two. And we go from 1 to 7 in this chart. In another chart, I will also show some more. We show the spiritual states of consciousness that are also part of this model. But first, I want to show you the core, the first 7. And also, you see colors, color labels, infrared, magenta, red, amber, orange, green, and teal. These are labeling for the same level. So we have a level, let's say the third one, and we either say Wilber 3 or we say red. And in the international integral community now, most people talk in colors. But some older experts of Wilber's work from the 90s, or those who are also using his original works, for example, our Integral Academy in Hungary, we use that. We also call the number levels. Now, the first stage, infrared or stage one, is between age 0 and 1. So this is the newborn baby's world. We can also match ages, you know, years to the different levels, which is very important. And level 2 magenta is between age 1 and 3. That's the early childhood mother sacred relationship where so many things happened and so many things are programmed for the adult self for later on. This is where many psychotherapies go back actually to uncover and to improve. I will talk more. I just go through first briefly. Stage 3 or red is between age 3 and 7. So this is the kindergarten era of a person. And just imagine how different is a 1-year-old, you know, baby and a 5-year-old, you know, boy or girl. So just intuitively, we feel that it's a different era in consciousness, in relationships, in managing your emotional states, etc. So this level 3 red is that era, age 3 to 7, the kindergarten era. We also call this the representational mind. Or if someone knows psychology, Piaget called it pre-operational functioning of the mind. And amber or level 4 is between age 7 and 12. So it starts around going to primary school. No wonder there's a huge change, you know, in the life, in the mentality, in the relationship, in the cognitive functioning of a person. In level three red, someone was in a relatively disorganized free room, the kindergarten, you know, and could play freely. And there was not too much structure imposed on the person. But on amber level four, structures, roles, being organized, keeping yourself in an order, suppressing your impulses comes into picture in a big way. That's what the person has to learn. So that's between age 7 to 12. Now, orange is between 12-year-old and late adulthood. There is no upper limit for level 5 or orange. This is the rational mind, the adult independent self, which people typically reach during adolescence. Of course, in adolescence, it's a startup mode of that functioning, but it's already that independent thinking, criticizing, let me alone, I'm an independent self kind of mode, which will be refined, you know, and bettered in the 20s and 30s and later on. And psychology in the mid 20th century was believing that this is the ceiling of development. So basically this chart, what we are watching now, was up till orange, and there was no other stages discussed or seen. And psychology comes from this notion that the normal rational adult self is the highest evolved human being. And if somebody has any problems, the person is somewhere lower in this development, the psychotherapist has to work with the person to get back to normal and to adapt the person to normal functioning. So that's Freudian psychology, that's cognitive psychology, that's behaviorism. The major schools of psychology from the first half of the 20th century. Now, the 60s brought a big change, not only for rock music and pop culture, but also for consciousness and even for professional psychology. And that's when level 6, green, started to occur. Both collectively, it was a new wave of consciousness that is with us today, but started around the 60s. And also within psychology, new schools were formed to announce, explore, and deal with that new consciousness. So such psychologies were humanistic psychology by Carl Rogers and Abraham Maslow, existential psychologies by Rollo May or Viktor Frankl and others, and also Gestalt from Fritz Perls. Today, these are kind of emblematic stars and heroes of that era, not anymore with us. These people have already passed away. The big psychologists, we call them postmodern psychologists, the green wave, the sixth stage of development. And these people started to talk about authenticity, that the most important is to get authentic, develop your authentic self. The most important thing is not to adapt to the rational average society, but there are more human potentials to unpack that are hidden in us. And this would be the sixth stage. What potentials? You should be more authentic than the average person. Let's get more sensitive and more communal. Modernity got us alienated and lonely and wearing masks. So let's get off the masks, come out with the vulnerable, real emotions and authentic self. Let's connect in a deeper way from that mode, and let's be sensitive, non-harming, and non-violent with each other. And the main focus became on green, sharing of the interior world, caring, empathy, and this is all called postmodernity. So I'm giving a nutshell here, just keywords so we can understand the stages. And this was the 60s, the 70s, the 80s. And evolution hasn't stopped even then. Moreover, it accelerated. And even another wave of consciousness started to emerge from the green postmodernism, which we call the post-postmodern or integral stage of consciousness. So that's how seventh stage or teal stage of consciousness emerged. It appeared somewhere around the 90s. And became more powerful since the 2000s. So So this is basically really, really a new wave of development, kind of surfing the top edge of the wave of evolution. It's very new. It's a lot to explore, and many people deal with the question how to translate it, how to implement it into the various areas of work. What is here? Thinking about an integral self, a holistic self, having an evolutionary purpose, giving up top-down hierarchies and exercising self-organizing in human collectives, in companies, being in a system flow, having a global thinking, and experiencing yourself as part of a larger system spiritually. So kind of the seventh stage teal has already a sense of spirituality, that there is a bigger field that connects us. There is an invisible bigger field that arranges what wants to happen. And we are not just individual selves with an individual psychology interacting and trying to be authentic, but we're actually led and governed from the invisible field. So individuals are more seen as nodes in a network of a field. And the most important question here, what the field wants, what wants to happen? Where is the collective field wanting to go instead of where I want to navigate it from my own interests? So there is a loosening of the ego. There is a loosening of the personal self and personal control. The more ease, more awareness and listening, you know, more centeredness, depths, more meditation. And basically, that's what we see now as the leading edge of evolution. May I pause here so that you might add something or navigate a little bit the discussion?
So what kind of, what question came to me? Maybe you can explain a bit more what you mean by evolutionary purpose.
Yes. So evolutionary purpose usually means that the person or many people together, a collective, feel that they are called to do something good for humanity. And this might sound banal, you know, or most psycho-spiritual circles would talk about it. There is a difference between being interested mentally, I like this, this is interesting, or really having a strong call in your soul. And if you have the strong call in your soul, that you will start to do unusually non-ordinary things that your parents, your friends, normal society would consider weird or strange. Or maybe they don't put you down, they just don't understand why are you doing this instead of making a lot of money or pursuing your career. So selves before this stage, like red, amber, orange selves, are having a feeling that I am separated and I need to make my own living, my own career. I need to do my control to control people so that happens what I want for my life. So there is a very strong ego-centeredness. It's more refined in orange than in red, but still, you know, so the good living, modernity's values, wealth, status, you know, healthy family life with good vacations, which are all fine, you know, legitimate needs of humans, even from a spiritual perspective. But in those, in the modern orange stage, that's all there is. That's all there is. And when you go beyond that modern orange self, you get postmodern, you open up and you deepen in that. Then in the green zone, you go through your personal feelings, emotions, and authenticity. So that's the first opening. And if that opens more, then in the depths of your own authentic self, even one layer deeper, you know, there is the transpersonal source, the spiritual source, that you are connected. You are actually always connected. You just don't sense, you just don't notice it when you are in the ego self. So, but when your ego loosens up, you open up, then you start to sense more and more the impulses of your transpersonal core. And typically that impulses are pulling you towards doing something for the greater good, for the evolution, you know, that one that happens, that wants to unfold.
Yeah.
So that's what we mean by evolutionary purpose. And it can be very simple, like creating a beautiful garden so that people can come here and meditate, you know, or it can be bigger, like changing a multinational company's top management so that it's more humanistic, cutting out less trees and more aligned with the future. Mm. It doesn't matter if your focus is narrower, you know, or big international. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter the size. The quality and the intention matters.
Mm-hmm.
And if the quality and intention is that evolutionary drive, then you will build beauty around yourself. You will create spaces and applications of the new consciousness that's full of beauty, full of grace, full of intelligence and compassion.
Mm. And what just also popped up in me when I listened to you, Benz, is that from my personal experience, so when there is really, you said also a deep calling, a deep call, I also sense it as if you would put a train on a track and it's just there and it moves. And in a way, your all intelligences, your talents kind of try to keep up and to sense in which direction and what is needed. And what you said, that sometimes the outer world says, oh, what you're doing is weird, or they don't understand you. I can also sense that even in myself, with this different strings of intelligences in myself, I can also see that some parts of me, they can catch up very easily and align, and some have a harder time. So where all my internal world would say, oh, what are you doing? Are you sure? So this is also happening, can happen inside as well. I just want to add that.
Thank you for adding that, Priya. And that's very important, because I think many of us go through this internal struggle, if I may call so, that you have this great new evolutionary idea, you bring it from your meditation, from your retreat, but then the other parts of the self are thinking something else, and that there might be an inner struggle. And I think it's very important that we have mentors, therapists, spiritual friends with whom we can talk this through and who can facilitate the internal reorganization of the self. There has to be an internal reorganization. So going from a conventional modern level to this postmodern and post-postmodern, you cannot avoid it having a big effect on your internal self. So it cannot be done just from the mind. But you need to restructure, transform your interior too.
Mm.
Yeah. And my observation that it takes at least 3 to 6 years, this inner transformation to stabilize, to relocate your home from the previous stage to the new stage. This relocation, like going to a new country to live, you know, and stabilizing there, making friends. Now your reality is about the new life. That's a few years. So it's very similar to the internal shift, the internal relocation to higher stage, that it takes just a few minutes to have a peak experience, to understand. You know, it takes another, you know, few days, weeks, months to read, discuss, go to conferences, understand, being enthusiastic, but it takes more like years to really change your whole life so that it reflects that new stage of consciousness.
Yeah. Right. And then you also mentioned that you have prepared something where we can see where it even continues from there.
Yes, the spiritual states I will introduce soon. Before we go to that chart, I still want to name some of the previous stages here because I just ran through them to name them. But they are more important than one might think. We might think that the previous stages 1, 2, 3, 4 is for children. Now we are adults, modern or postmodern. So the new area is exciting. But let me tell you, if we would think that, we wouldn't be integralist. We would be maybe beginner new agers who just look forward. What makes an integralist mature, an expert, that we understand that the previous stages are with us right now, while we are watching this, while we are talking, all these layers of the self, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it's here. It's never gone. It may be more quiet in us, or it may be more, you know, silenced or repressed, or used wisely and well in the adult self as a part, but it's with us for the whole life. So what are these issues? The stage one issue is typically using your body well and using your senses well. This is, for a normal adult person, okay, it goes fine. It's online, it's operating. You walk, you can reach for a cup, pull to your mouth and drink. These are motorial coordinations that are well functioning. For sick people, this might be impaired. Or vision, hearing, for a normal person, it works fine, but for a psychotic person, that is hallucinations, that's a level one disorder. Or, listen, spiritual people, if you go to an altered state of experience and your vision and hearing or body sense starts to shape shift, starts to change, you are in a trance state with meditation, with holotrope breathwork, with marijuana or other mind-altering drugs, they start to change the perception and the sense of bodily self. That's also stage one modification. So this is how you can see that in an adult life, even the first stage of development, which is normally online and healthy, can change, can alter. And people who are on the streets, homeless, living from day by day, have regressed to that survival mode of stage one. So it's not just the early childhood baby who had that. We all have that. And in circumstances, we might be challenged in level one. So level two is even more with us in everyday life. As I said, level two is the age 1 to 3, when the child is getting into the mother-child dual relationship. Emotionally, subjectively, they form an intimate, basically, communion, what they have. And bonding starts to develop. Personal boundaries start to develop. Attachment style starts to develop. Trust is forged there. So you as an adult, how do you trust people? How do you trust the universe? Or how fearful you are, or distrustful and controlling, has its base down there at level two. Or how are you with your boundaries? Some people are too much for others. They kind of go through the boundaries of other people and don't even notice it. That's a level two phenomena. Some others are too sensitive. Don't come closer, you are too much, they withdraw. That's also a boundary question. I'm not saying it's a problem. I'm careful with the words. I'm just saying that's a level two issue. It might be all right, but it belongs to that level. And we have to see if the person feels fine or if there is any problem, disorder that can be improved there. And also what is so important, that attachment, bonding. Do I belong somewhere? If yes, my level two is well functioning. It gets the green tick. Belonging, fine. Or I don't belong anywhere. I have friends, but I don't have even one intimate friendship, intimacy, belonging. You know, I don't belong to any country, or do I belong to one location? These are all magenta questions. And the reason I'm emphasizing it, because in the postmodern green, initial new age, we want to throw it out, you know, basically to the garbage. I'm a global self. I don't need any country to belong. I'm at home everywhere on earth. It sounds very global, high stage. But people actually find that they have roots, that they have families that they wanted to surpass because the family is in the old consciousness, I'm the new consciousness, they don't understand me, I go away. So as you see, the new spirituality and this global unity consciousness is full of unresolved lower stage issues. So basically, us new spirituality people, we need not only to open up the higher stages, but we need to go to the previous stages of the self inside, in psychotherapy, and uncover, understand, and if necessary, work through those issues in ourselves. So higher stages and lower stages are very much interconnected inside. And this new understanding is the integral consciousness for Rhea. Understanding the levels and understanding how we have to work all of the stages, not just the upper one. And this is a more mature, new psycho-spirituality that were born of the initial 60s, 70s psycho-spirituality when we thought that we just go beyond all this egoic stuff, just open the spiritual and everything will be fine. Yeah. So that's a magenta level too, this kind of belonging, trust, attachment, roots, family. How is the person with those questions? And I differentiate between two kinds of globalism, global thinking, global culture. One kind of globalism that I'm a global self, not nationalistic, beyond that. Open my heart to Gaia. You know, I'm global self. And one approach of this global self is that I'm at home everywhere with anyone in this planet. I'm a digital nomad. You know, I don't need an apartment, an address. I'm global citizen. Give me my global citizen passport. That's kind of approach one. Approach two, that yes, I am global and my heart is open to everyone on the earth, you know, accepting all cultures, loving them. But I also have a root. Maybe I am German and I am a global self. Maybe I am Hungarian and I am a global self. Maybe I am American or Thai or Japanese and I am a global self. It's like a tree that has trunk, roots, and a big branch. And this big branch is encompassing the globe. It's all around the globe. But the trunk and the root comes from somewhere in the globe. And this would be like an integral approach to being global that also accepts, understands the roots, the trunk, which would be in this level model, red, magenta, infrared, the lower stages. And that's one of the dilemmas of Europe today. We have this European, maybe I can say crisis, with the migrants, that they are kind of shaking the European citizens to start to think about, you know, I am really global, or I am postmodern, welcoming, or I am traditionalist, this is my culture, nobody comes in. For example, unfortunately, Hungary's prime minister, you know, has a very level 4 amber response, closed down the boundaries, traditional cultures, which is a regression from orange modern Hungary. Even for Hungarians is a bit shocking, like surprising, like regress one back. Too much of that, even for Hungarians. So Hungary already went from amber to orange, from kingdom to modernity and parliamentary capitalist system that's orange, and now it's a little bit regressed. That's one response. Le Pen, others also, Putin, this kind of traditionalist Amber response. And modernity would treat it like quotas, like we will divide, we will negotiate how much people we put where, with more openness to internationality, you know. And postmodernists would say that open the boundaries, welcome everyone, basically let it happen, give them social welfare. So this European crisis basically calls out each of these stages of the European field. And what it does, that it strengthens the national identity, I think. Hungarians are more proud now to be Hungarians. French are anyway proud to be French, you know. And the question is, and I hope Germans will be proud of being German, because I work also with Germany a lot. I know from my dear German friends and groups that there is a hesitation to step out more with national pride and leadership because of the Second World War. So there's a lot of healing that needs to be here. We are not in a phase where there are no nations anymore and everybody is just a global brotherhood and sisterhood. We are in a phase where we need to have a healthy national identity and a healthy amber and a healthy orange, green, and teal. So be a proud German of your culture and welcome all the brothers and sisters from the globe, because it's one human family. And the problem is when somebody gets proud, I'm a German, I'm Hungarian, level 4, and it stops there and it's only that. That's what we would call nationalism. And that would be a regression to the Middle Ages, basically, the exclusive nationalism. But a healthy part of national identity, a healthy part of roots to the family, to the region that you came from, not identifying too much, but kind of a healthy root there and the thread and the beautiful big tree can create integrated, healthy, global people, I think. What do you think, Korea?
It sounds good. I really take in this picture what you brought, and this really having deep roots make mm-hmm. me able to have huge expanded branches as well. Mm-hmm. So that mm-hmm. really makes sense for me. And what also came up, that you really can also jump between them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How do you see that jump?
I mean that with some issues which you kind of face, you might have a response in an amber area. In other issues you face, you might respond with an orange or in green or even other response. So it what I get is that in different circumstances with different topics, you can mm-hmm. also have responses from different stages.
Yes, I agree. So finally, I want to talk about the red and the amber a little bit and then go to the spiritual stages. Red is the psychodynamic zone of the self, kindergarten era, 3 to 7 year old in the children, and that part of the adult. We normally call it the inner child in pop psychology or popular psychology. And the inner child, or that part of ourself, which is the inner child, has a good side and a bad side, has light and shadow. And the light of level 3 or red is playfulness, creativity, the playful inner child, the creative. When you meet your girlfriends as an adult or your friends and you start to kind of joke with each other, you start to tickle each other, suddenly we are like children again, playful, spontaneous, creative, playing together. That's also level 3. But also the shadow, the psychodynamic shadow, like being hurt. You know, somebody said something and I'm hurt. Or I start doing games under the surface. I'm jealous, or I try to stop somebody meeting with another person because I want that person and I'm jealous to this one. All these kinds of human games that are go either open or most of the time hidden, this is also the red zone. And another very important topic connected to this is power. Power is level 3 red phenomena, both in a good way and a bad way. Power in a good way, do you have a personal power? When you step up and show up, are you powerful or are you kind of like a little mouse saying sorry for being here? That would be a shadow, a power dynamic, you know. People who don't want to show themselves are not stepping into their inner power. And for a healthy integral self, even a healthy spiritual self from a higher stage, you need to have a healthy red layer, that your power is brought out. It's incorporated in your personality system, not suppressed, but also it doesn't get into power games. Because from power, if it's unchecked within yourself, then it might turn into being violent and going into power games. So violence is nothing else but basically exercising too much power with a blind eye of the effect on the other, or with a cold heart, not caring. But with a sufficient integration of your inner power, with a green sensitivity in relationship, that's a very healthy combination that an integral personality should have. Often what happens that postmodern New Age people, green people, are very happy and celebrate their unity, their connectedness. They allow everyone any emotion, but they avoid power and they avoid anger and aggression. And the green dream from sixth stage is that there will be no more anger in the world. I will be never again angry. So it's a nice dream, but it's unrealistic. Sooner or later, everyone will be pissed off to little or more. But anger is part of the human system. So also, if you're a more mature personality, then you accept that anger is part of me. Anger will always be a part of me. My job in the inner path is not to remove anger altogether forever. It's more like incorporate the power of anger as a power and learn ways how to be angry that doesn't hurt other people, how to channel, how to release anger, you know, internally or in a workshop, how to get the clarity that anger brings. Actually, it's a creative force that's there for problem solution, solving problems. That's why anger is there. Go and solve the problem. Get that essence of the problem-solving energy and let go of the harming aspect of anger. So if someone can work on that, that would integrate the suppressed red psychodynamic level. And finally, one of the most important things what I experience and notice with red power issues, that what is about leadership? Leadership question, leadership issues. Leadership means that someone wants to do something, announces it, and wants to organize that. So if I say that I want to create a spiritual center and gather people so that we go to that direction, then I'm a leader. I'm not a leader because I'm a leader or somebody appointed me, but simply in the new age, postmodern, psycho-spiritual world, people want to do new things for this world. So they start to lead. And the big question is, where is the boundary of being too much of leading, too egoistic? How much extent shall I let go of my wills and wants to be spiritual? This is a classical dilemma that has a lot of shadows in the new consciousness communities. And basically, how to distribute power, who has the last word when we have to decide something, this is all red questions, or this issue will bring up red parts of the self, whether to say, because there is amber leadership, orange leadership, green leadership, red leadership, and integral teal leadership. Now, teal integral leadership wouldn't suppress red, would let people have a healthy red, would not let people have destructive red. But for example, a green leadership might avoid the red layer of the self. Amber leadership would simply announce power roles. Whoever has a role, that role authorizes people to do some things. And if you are not authorized, you cannot do it. We are not interested in your personal self, in what you feel, what you think. You are just a machine element in a structure, which where the elements have role descriptions. If you step into that position, you take into that role, and that gives your amber power. So we could talk hours about leadership in the stages, but this is kind of a nice base, and I just want to bring into awareness the least comfortable issue that's everywhere where I just look is the leadership power question that has also this red aspect in it. Okay, so shall we go then to the spiritual stages?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me then shift and find a couple of charts that I opened up here. I didn't prepare a PowerPoint, so I'm more free and flexible to look for the charts. This is a good one too, but maybe we go there later. One second. Okay, so here, this chart with numbers, colors, spiral dynamics. Okay, this was Wilbur's original stages of development from the 90s, or one of the originals from the versions of the era that many of us consider the core description. It was published in his book, Brief History of Everything, in the 90s. And here you see that after stage 6 comes 7, 8, 9, and 10. So these four stages, psychic, subtle, causal, and non-dual, this would be the spiritual states that people can either have a peak experience of or grow into as a stable, you know, structure of consciousness. So, and I will talk a little later about the structures versus states question. But to understand them in a nutshell, psychic mind or psychic consciousness is, or Vibha 7, is where you start to sense that there is a hidden spiritual reality that is affecting your life. You don't yet experience directly invisible worlds. You don't see light or no spirit is talking to your ears, but you are seeing this ordinary world when you look around, but things happen that intuitively you say, this is not by chance. For example, the not by chance experiences. Does rational mind people say, no, it's by chance. No, I feel in my heart, it's not by chance. There is synchronicity here, synchronistic events, telepathy. You think of someone and that person calls you on the phone. It's not by chance. We have sensed into each other and we enacted it. Telepathy or looking into the future consciously or accidentally, you have an image or a dream and later that happens in the life. We call it precognition. These are all psychic phenomena. I call it entry spirituality. and many people start their spiritual career, so to say, spiritual phase of life with this kind of experiences. And what is that quality that is common in feeling the not by chance things, in seeing synchronicities, in sensing that fate wants to play its role in your life? That's intuition, love, and faith. I think these three qualities, which are all seated in the heart space, in the heart center, intuition, it's actually the heart that senses, not so much the mind. The mind maybe knows, but the sensing organ is the heart, the open heart, sensing, listening, what wants to happen, intuition, faith, belief, believing in something bigger, higher, invisible force, God in traditional terms, cosmic consciousness in more postmodern terms, or the field, and love, compassion. May you develop any of these three, love or compassion, faith or intuition. All the other two will automatically grow, and your psychic self will gradually come online more and more. And what is the homework for us? That we have to use it. We have to listen to it. Because these subtle intuitions, messages from your deeper self, signs of the world through synchronicities that want to guide you, they are very soft. They are very non-violent. And your conventional thinking and emotions, level 3, 4, 5 during the day, are more violent, more loud. And the whole society is supporting that. So you need to exercise to listen to this subtle voice, listen to the synchronicities, and make your decisions based on that, as opposed to make your decisions based on your gross, ordinary self. So that's basically one of the things to exercise if you are bringing online your and deepening your psychic self.
So in a way, it's also really shifting to another priority, really allowing a new inner order to happen.
Exactly.
And what pops up when I listen to you, Benz, is that for many of us, this might maybe also mean that we need to revisit other stages to do healing or integration work to have really a profound and healthy and balanced foundation to make yes. those experiences not just as peak experiences now and then, but really build up a profound foundation that we can kind of really make that as a general operating system in us.
Exactly, correct. As you say, and here we have to differentiate between peak experience and the stabilized stage of development. Because basically anyone can have a level 7 psychic peak experience. Even a child, a 5-year-old child, can have a synchronicity sense or telepathy. But the personality is not yet there. It's just a peak experience, like jumping up for a moment. Even a rational scientist can have in the laboratory an intuitive moment, like Kekulé had with the benzo ring, you know, and other scientists, big inventions, that might be a psychic moment there. That then they went back to their rational modern self and worked it out as science. But there are people who shift their residence from the rational modern self to the psychic self, and those people really start to live their life from there and follow an inner path, which is post-conventional, not non-conventional, maybe post-rational, as you also call it. So all of these spiritual states are post-conventional and post-rational, inner-guided states. So let's go to the level next to this one. Wilbur 8, subtle, This is where the person has a direct experience of the invisible spiritual world. For example, the person has a light experience. White light is flooding the consciousness in a meditation. That would be called a subtle light experience. Or for some meditator in the church, Christ appears and the person actually sees Christ in a light form, standing in the church or with closed eyes in the 3D space in front of the head, basically. These are the subtle experiences in the visual field. Sometimes people hear, you know, spiritual voices, either spirits talking to them, like shamans, or in a yogic meditation, hearing Om as the basic sound of the universe vibrating. That would be a subtle auditive experience. Or, for example, in the Buddhist Vipassana tradition, some of the schools like Goenka's Vipassana are just describing a state when you go deep into meditation where you feel your body dissolving into subatomical particles. So the actual experience that your body is not anymore gross chunks of my arm, my shoulder, but all over trillions of particles arising and passing away, arising from the void and passing away. And that's the ultimate reality of the body and materiality. That's also a subtle spiritual experience in the kinesthetic reality. So it looks like behind this gross reality of seeing objects, feeling gross body, hearing physical sounds, there is a subtle reality behind all this gross. And if you subtle your consciousness, if you go deep into experiences, then the ultimate subtle reality of the phenomena shows up for you as a direct experience, not as a philosophy, but just as a real experience as drinking my tea right now. So visual experiences, lights, seeing or hearing spiritual beings, God experiences, even seeing past lives, if somebody is journeying into past life memories, is here. Or near-death experiences are also in this category. When the person is leaving the body, seeing a tunnel, going to the light, a visitation from family members who already passed away. This is a typical description of near-death experiences. This is also the direct experience of the unseen spiritual world. So remember that this is the definition of subtle, direct experience of the invisible world, while as the definition of psychic, level 7, is not having a direct experience of that yet, being in this ordinary world, but having an intuitive sense through synchronicities that there is something that's in action organizing this world from the background. Now, what is Kozho or Wilbur level 9? That what the mystics and deep meditators report, that behind all the phenomena, there is a universal consciousness that holds and experiences all of these phenomena. And everything that's arising stays, gives you an experience, and then goes away. It's not the final reality yet. Even a spiritual being comes and says something and goes away. That's not eternal. It was a few minutes, few seconds. So if it's gross body experience, if it's my ordinary thinking, if it's a intuition, if it's a subtle spiritual experience, these are all transient, coming and going. Behind all this, there is something that's eternal, that doesn't come and goes. It's always there and experiences it all. And that's your ultimate self. That's the awakened universal consciousness that's basically common in all of us. We all carry that. And in the big awakenings, enlightenment experiences, we basically get back to that part of the self. And that's in Buddhism called nirvana. So that's the nirvana experience in Eastern terms, or in yoga, that's the nirvikalpa samadhi, or in Christian mysticism, that's unification with God, unio mystica. So we can see that all spiritual traditions talking about this experience is described worldwide with different namings and symbolism, but this is a universal human experience, getting fully awakened, enlightened, and go back to the source where it's all created from. It's also called the witness, that witnesses all the phenomena. So,
and Bense,
level
and
10.
And yes. Bense, would the term nothingness or silence, which is the foundation for forms mm-hmm. to arise, would that also apply to that?
Yes, nothingness or void is exactly that. Silence, I would be a little careful with that. If it's silence and only that and nothing arises, just silence filling the whole world, then yes. Being silent in your meditation, but you still know that here is my body, I'm sitting here, little sounds out there, and inside I'm silent in a silent forest, that's not yet a nirvana experience. In a nirvana experience or unification with God experience, there is nothing arising. There is no sound. You might sit in a meditation. Actually, that's what how it happens usually. Someone is sitting and meditating. But for the duration of the experience, seconds maybe, you don't hear. You don't see. You forget fully about your body. No thinking is arising. Full silence in the mind. No images. Images in the mind stop. No emotions, emotions stop, and no spiritual experiences, no intuition, no light, no seeing the future or past life, that everything stops.
Yeah, so basically what happens is that I as me totally disappears.
Exactly. You as you disappear, the ego disappears, the senses disappear, and what stays and not disappears is the ultimate consciousness that cannot disappear because it's always there. And that's how we get back there. Actually, it's not somewhere else that you have to find it because it's already here, but it's covered by all the other things happening. You know, and if you let go of everything, I let it stop. I let everything stop. You know, I sit as Buddha was having a strong determination after 9 years of failure. He couldn't awaken. So, and then he sat down and said, I will not stand up from this position below this tree until I am fully awakened. And that was according, of course, to the legendary traditional texts. That was the night of the awakening, the full moon night in May of the awakening, whether it's objectively so or not, but the message is valid that for such a breakthrough meditation, people have to have a good determination to see through anything that arises and not jump up because I'm hungry, jump up because there's a leg pain. Sit it through. You need to learn to sit deep, long, in quiet until you sink so deeply inside that everything stops. And what remains is the pure consciousness. And that's when you understand who you are.
And would you also say, Ben, so in my experience, it's also that there comes then a point where I really would need to let go of every method, of every tool which I would apply from some level of my form, in a way.
Correct. I think I agree with you that after a point, you need to let go even the methods, even the notion that there is a God consciousness, everything. Fully let go, fully relax, fully being yourself, relax, let go. Until boom, it happens. For me, it happened when I was 20 plus once. That's why I'm so enthusiastic and sure about it, basically.
Yeah, same to me. So that kind of that started my whole exploration journey to find out more about.
Beautiful. And I keep hearing stories that it happened to many people. Or some people, I don't know numbers, not too many, but there are keep coming people who it had, this experience, and that gives for a life certainty and energy for the battery to go, right? And to walk the path. And for many of us, this experience comes as a grace. It just happens. You cannot calculate it or prescribe that after 5 days of meditation, it will come again. Who knows when it comes again? But at least those who experience typically understand what's the game about, this enlightenment. What is it about? It's about letting fully go and heading back to that original self. And then we have to find ways to work out the pathway, you know, to there, and restructure our lives that allows that to happen. Because in a busy life, it's very difficult to let that happen. So people often change into a more contemplative lifestyle, more relaxed lifestyle with more quiet, more retreat, and finding the balance between being in retreat and quiet, because the soul is yearning to this depth, and being in service and organizing mode out there.
And what I would like to add is, especially, is simplicity.
Yeah. Simplicity will support this. Complexity will maybe slow it down. Yes. Mm. So, and finally, one might ask, why is there a tenth stage? If this is the ultimate reality, what can be after that? There is nothing after this. There is no other reality behind this. This is the ultimate reality. But what often happens that if a person goes into this ultimate reality, for the period of the experience, for those seconds or moments or minutes, there is no other outer world, just the void, just the God consciousness. And when we come back, we experience that now we are back and we are not there. So there's a duality of being here in the world of phenomena, which is called samsara, or being there in the original God consciousness, which is called nirvana in the East. So the Eastern traditions have this beautiful distinction of samsara and nirvana, being in the God consciousness or being lost in the world of forms. And that too can be unified, where you are in the samsara, but you already experience God consciousness or the nirvana experience. You are sitting here engaging, talking, but you experience this all as luminous universal awareness, as the void, that the forms are nothing but emptiness, and emptiness is nothing but form. And the two is kind of integrated. And if someone has that experience or that capacity, that we would call a non-dual realization, or non-dual enlightenment.
So in a way, when I understand you correct, so you would really deeply know and embody and live like that samsara is in a way part of nirvana.
Yes. Yes. And personally,
included.
But personally, I believe that not many people have that. Many people say they have that. And I am a critical voice of the non-duality, because it's very easy to mix up with a more ordinary meditative experience that I'm sitting here in quiet. I'm feeling my body. I'm hearing the sounds. And at the same time, I also have a part that is quiet and watching, you know. And it's easy to label this, oh, I'm non-dual, because I'm partly quiet, partly I'm here. And I understand, yes, that quiet is God, this sounds is world, but this is very shallow. It is very shallow. A real non-dual experience need to have a profound nirvana experience part in it. Not just an ordinary sitting a little bit and witnessing, you know, mindfulness state. Mm. So I was sitting in Burma in monasteries, you know, I'm a Buddhist meditator for 20 years. I did a lot of retreats, and I know that it's not easy to quiet, not easy to go back there, you know, and I just have a hard time to believe that in a 20-minute session somewhere in the city, people come together and say, oh, this was non-dual. See? it's maybe my bias or maybe my experience, you know, so let's be humble and careful what to label non-dual. Let's understand what it's meant originally by the tradition, and let's use it in that way. And let's respect the traditional 1,000-year-old terms, descriptions, and let's not include them. So that's my kind of approach to these noble and beautiful highest stages. So let's look again into the matrix that we are looking. It's called the Wilber-Combs lattice or Wilber-Combs matrix, because Ken Wilber was teamed up with Ellen Combs, another consciousness researcher, and they created this together. Mm. So in the left side, you see personality structure stages. It means that Wilber 1, Wilber 2, Wilber 3, 4, 5, 6, that also is early, late, and early, middle, late, 6 stages, those are the structures, the stages that develop in your personal self, in your ego. So this is ego development from early childhood up till very evolved postmodern, post-postmodern personalities. And the spiritual states are put horizontal as state stages. Those are kind of universal sequence of states of consciousness unfolding. And that's called waking up. So when we are working of opening or level 7, 8, 9, 10, psychic, subtle, causal, non-dual state experiences, then we are working on waking up spirituality. Waking up spiritually, and when we are working on a healthy level 4, 5, 6 and integrating those parts of the personality, then we are working on growing up, being psychologically saying a growing up adult, because we might be grown up in body but very childish behaving and messy, you know, personality is full of games. So we have to go to therapy and work it through, you know, and mature our personality so that we are a mature integral personality in a higher stage. And for that, the best method is individual and group therapy, not meditation. That's very important, that meditation will do not grow your personality and will not really work through your shadows, but psychotherapeutical work will mature your personality and clean your shadow.
And in meditation, it might show up for you, yes, which area you need to kind of work.
Yes, yes. And the other way around, to awaken spirituality, psychotherapy will not really do it. It will prepare the ground. It will help it to happen easily because it relaxes the ego. But you actually need to meditate. You actually need to do some spiritual meditation practice to wake up. And this is a very important kind of message from the integral world, this integral psychology has, that we need both psychotherapy and both meditation. And the distortion of the spiritual people or New Age people, no psychotherapy, that's all thing, you know. Only meditation will do everything. My Guruji said, just meditate. Mm. Sorry. We have a better wisdom here through so many decades of trying it. We know that we need psychotherapy. And the traditional psychotherapists will say, oh, that's spiritual, la, la, la. No, what is real is your emotions, thoughts right here, your relationships, stick to that. Mm. That's also a reductionism. Mm. So psychotherapy from psychology, spirituality, meditation from that side, the two together will give you the full integral growth of yourself.
Mm-hmm. And Bense, in we could also use not just typical traditional methods of meditation, but it could also be for some people, maybe it's dancing, maybe it's painting, maybe it's another way of being creative and kind of having an circumstances where you can kind of really open up beyond what is familiar, yes, to you.
Yes, I agree. I agree, though I would extend that I think painting, dancing in a meditative way we really bring you into deeper states. We'll even process your personal issues to some extent. So it's good for both meditation and therapy. But I think to deepen in meditation after a certain point, you need to stop and sit down and get quiet and close your eyes. So I think the last bit of the journey in meditation, for that you need quiet and stillness.
Yeah.
Just think how Christ got enlightened. He did a retreat. He went to what in the Bible, you know, I don't know if it was 30 days or 40 days, but he went to the retreat, to the Wüste in German.
The desert, yeah.
The desert retreat, right? If Christ needed it, why wouldn't we, ordinary people, need it? Then Mohammed, in the Islamic tradition, got his enlightenment and download in a cave, in a 40-day retreat. And Buddha went to retreat for 9 years continuously before he was enlightenment. So all basically the spiritual texts of the great traditions are talking about a saintly person who went to a retreat and got enlightened and then came back. So I usually refer to the great ones to tell my students that you might also need a retreat if you want to get really deep in meditation.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think we basically covered the Wilbur Combs Lattice. Maybe one last notion, that the beauty of this one, that you don't need to be in a higher stage of personality in order to have spiritual experiences. The previous model suggested that this is a sequential growth. And this model shows that when it comes to states, to spiritual states, it can occur wherever you are in your personality development. So a traditional Christian person on level 4, the mythic amber, fundamentalist Christian who doesn't believe in anybody else. Everybody goes to hell but us Christians, and we should convert everyone. You know, medieval Christianity, those people also can have telepathic experience level 7. Those people also can see the white light, subtle experience. Those people might also have a union mystica with Godhead. So we have to differentiate between the state of personality, which level, and the spiritual experience. And this gives us a matrix of many different kinds of human experiences. That also explains for me why ISIS is happening and why ISIS might be spiritual. You know, some of them, not all. But some of the ISIS leaders might have spiritual experience, but their personality and thinking is level 3, red, egocentric, impulsive, you know, violent. And they might use their spiritual insight as a proof that Allah is with them and only with them, and they should kill all the infidels. So a spiritual experience in itself is not a guarantee for a higher personality stage. That's very important to understand for the new world.
And isn't it also, as when I remember it correctly, it's also that in a way how you would interpret and put labels on your experience is dependent from in which stages of your development you are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Basically, you just said the same thing with other words, that you will label, interpret your experience from the stage where you are. If you are in a mythic stage, you will say after a white light experience that God has spoken to me.
Mm.
And I should be a good churchgoer on Sunday morning at night, right? And God showed that Christianity is the true religion and not the others. That would be like a mythic, ethnocentric, fundamentalist approach. The same white light of subtle experience for a rational mind would say, wow, I had some magical experience. I want to research the chemical background in the brain. You know, it might be a laboratory researcher, and we'll do the mathematics and thinking to prove that chemistry is matched with that experience. You know, and the person would talk in uncertainty language. There might be a God. I had an experience. I personally believe, but mm-hmm. I cannot be not sure. So the whole thinking and interpretation would be full of that kind of hypothetic language that science has.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And in level six, such an experience would be interpreted as the collective intelligence of God showed us as a light, and all humanity is connected from one source. So the narrative is level six. The experience is the same. And that's how we end up with so many different values according to the stages, interpreting universal human spiritual experiences.
Mm-hmm. And Bence, I mean, I'm aware of that the time together would come to an end, but if you have still time, and I know that this is again a very huge topic, but I would be really sad if you would not kind of also address what is all of what you shared now and with all this understanding. What does this mean on a level of evolution now as a collective, as humanity? How could we kind of apply that, and what would support us in our collective development?
I think our collective development now wants to open up level six and seven zone, that zone. So at the same time, the green opening is going on, going to workshops, opening up, showing your emotions, being authentic, talk honestly, and connect with your fellow, you know, people in this circle as brothers and sisters, as we have been knowing each other for years after 2 days. These kind of experiences are the green experience that we badly need, the whole world would need. If this would be global, then there will be no more war. There will be world peace. So this whole green movement, John Lennon, Imagine, the hymn of the green meme, is still something to unpack for humanity. According to the research numbers that are available, Ken Wilber refers to them, he says that approximately 15 to 30% of the world, he believes, is on green stage, which is actually a lot, but still not the majority. And also the integral consciousness is starting to unfold. It's maybe 5 to 5%, not 15%, but it's happening to many people. It's happening to me. It's probably happening to you. You know, a lot of Europeans, we created the Inter-European Conference that gathers these people to meet. So that's also happening. So this is where the edge is. It's not yet higher. That's also important to see, that it's not that everybody is going to be telepathically communicating next year, or it's not yet that we are going to levitate and give up cars. That's what we were thinking in the 70s, 90s. The new age is coming, 2012 is coming, Aquarius is coming. So within 20, 30 years, it's going to be all spiritual and magical. No, it's slower. And now we see that between rational and everybody spiritually flying, there are other stages. So we are somewhere here now that's organically unfolding. And that's what the collective consciousness is pushing us to do. Those who are in the front of evolution.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And those people who are at the back tail of evolution, like ISIS, like you can't even grasp how in the 21st century, beheading, killing everyone but the fiddles, one sect, even in Islam and all the other sects, even in Islam, should be eradicated from earth. It's so, you know, early medieval, you know, approach. Mm-hmm. But it's still happening. So there is that part of evolution, there is the middle norm, and there is the front, you know, of evolution that's unfolding.
Mm-hmm. And maybe I would like to use at the end of our conversation the chance to ask you, what took you out of this year's European Integral Conference? What really touched you the deepest?
Uh-huh. Yeah, so here I take the chance to share with you these two. And actually, I want to show you something. If I can share again the screen. You mentioned the Integral European Conference, which we organize every second year, and this was the third one. And, you know, first of all, the community is so exciting when we are at these conferences. We just refer to the conference as IEC, the Integral European Conference. Here is the visual for it, for those of you who are new to this conferencing. And the excitement that so many people came together to one house, which was a huge conference hotel, 620 of this kind of thinking was there. 620 people came from 48 countries, from all continents, not just Europe. So the excitement of multiculturalism combined with integral stage thinking is kind of a peak experience for many of us. Mm. You know, the social community. Mm. If I'm sitting at home talking to you, looking at online programs, reading books, that's a very important warm up for this. We already feel that, wow, we are multinational, we are around. It's not just me and my friend. And when we physically meet and spend 6 days together, day and night, except for sleep, you know, but we'll be whole day together in programs, that's a very deeply satisfying experience. Mm. And of course, there was a lot of, you know, keynote speakers, famous, you know, international stars, new talents, all kinds of events, but the community experience is one of the most profound. And I want to show you also some pictures. If I can navigate my way through here. One of the community processes were the international constellation, which I think we should have at least a minute of.
Please.
Of visuals here. So here we have actually this album collection. Each picture is one album. You click and go and you find many photos of the different days. And here is the constellation album. So basically we had here around 500 people engaging into a mass group process, which lasted for 5 hours.
Wow.
So it's a 5 hour long constellation process. Here are five of us who are leading it, myself and dear colleagues from Germany, Canada, Austria, and Hungary. And here you see the people. This is kind of the first moments of the evening. And then what happened that we constellated countries and cultures, cultural elements, and important topics of the international world. What do I mean by that? For example, just want to zoom out. For example, we were working with terrorism, with Middle East, with Europe, with European countries, with continents like Asia, and we were constellating those qualities. That means that we send them into the middle of the room. One second. And let those players interact with each other. So here I scroll down after some preparation. Look, for example, this one. Here, dogmatism and politicians are interacting with each other.
Mm.
Or shame and beauty meeting. So what happens, those of you who are not so familiar with constellation, that we choose players from the group, like representatives of equality, and give roles. For example, who wants to be the shame tonight? And then this red shirt gentleman puts up his hand from the crowd. I take that role. So here we spread out for 50 people, 50 different roles, that we carefully pre-select as important qualities for Europe and the international field. And then we let these people interact with each other in a one-hour non-verbal process. Nobody speaks, no one word is said. It's all in silence, and music is also played. So there's a very carefully selected music that basically helps consciousness to open up and helps these people to go into their intuitive self that will then channel the field and play out these different scenarios and interactions that are happening here. And the rest of the people were sitting on a big circle around this central sacred space. This man with culture, this is, for example, a Greek psychotherapist. So Greece, the Greek person representing culture. This lady in beauty, I think he's from the Netherlands. Spirit of Peace, he's from the Czech Republic. So this lady is from Germany. So it's so beautiful to have this richness of cultural people, integral consciousness, and this important current topics of international world and politics and spirituality that we play out. So this international constellation process was one of my favorite or the deepest that happened in the Integral European Conference. The next one is in 2020. So if you are interested, go to this website, integraleuropeanconference.com, scroll down, and then you find all the information. You can download MP3s from the last conference. You can come to next smaller events. You can sign up for a newsletter so that you are in this community, and then we invite you to the gatherings.
Wow, thank you so much, Bence. I feel so deeply nourished, and it was so much joy to really dive into the integral theory with you and listening to your experiences. And you put that complex theory so beautifully in words, I guess, that everyone can really take something out of it. And I also want to really use the time to thank you for, I mean, organizing a conference so big and for so long. I cannot imagine how much that is. So, but I really want to thank you for doing that, Bence.
You are so welcome, and thank you for appreciating this. It's a big, big organizing task. It's last 1.5 years with a team, of course, but it's a beautiful service. We feel we cannot do it, whether we make money or not money, but it's such an evolutionary push or call that we just can't resist, and we do it. We keep doing it. So I hope that I will meet you, Puria, in person there in 2 years.
Yeah, or next year. I would like to.
And I hope that we'll meet many of the viewers here, and I hope that you guys who are viewing this program will meet each other there and form a real community of like-minded hearts and minds.
Thank you so much, Bence.
Thank you, Puria, for the invite.
And thank you to everyone taking your time, listening to the audio, watching the video, and maybe sharing with your friends. And I hope you take a lot out of it and get really inspired and nourished from what we shared today. Thank you so much.